Welcome to What's the 211 podcast, where we provide you with information about resources and programs in your community. 211 Maryland is a health and human service line for anyone seeking help for themselves or someone else. You can dial 211 if you need help with food, rent, or other services. Text your zip code to 898-211 or visit our website at www.211md.org. If you or someone is in a mental health crisis or needs help with substance abuse, dial 211 and press 1 to immediately be connected with someone.
Welcome to What's the 211, where you will hear about organizations, services in your community. If you or anyone you know needs help finding resources, dial 211. If it's a crisis, dial 211, press 1 to be immediately connected with one of our crisis specialists. So today we have one of our special guests, Dr. Alexander Chan, with Mental and Behavioral Health Specialist with University of Maryland Extension. Good morning. Welcome, Dr. Chan.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Thank you. Definitely appreciate you coming on board. Could you tell us a little bit about what the University of Maryland Extension program is and what your role is there?
Yeah, so if you're not familiar with University of Maryland Extension, it is a statewide non-formal educational program that brings the research and resources of the University of Maryland and the land grant system to the community, out to the citizens of Maryland. So we have field educators based at offices in all 23 counties and Baltimore City. We provide programs in the areas of 4-H, youth development, family and consumer sciences, agriculture, and environment and natural resources. And so we do these programs across the state. And so I'm actually in the family and consumer sciences program area as a mental and behavioral health specialist.
Perfect. And you also, you mentioned that you know, it's a part of the University of Maryland Extension. Is this a part of the college or is this separate? Does someone have to be a student to sort of learn more about this initiative programs?
Yeah, so we're actually based in the College of Agriculture because of the history of Extension being a educational program targeting farmers from over 100 years ago. But actually, you don't have to be a student at the university to receive University of Maryland Extension programming. So that's actually the purpose of Extension is to go beyond campus and educate citizens out in the community.
Great. And so I know you mentioned a little bit about behavioral health. Could you help us for folks who are listening? Actually, what does that mean for someone you know who's listening in behavioral health, and how does that really connect with them when they're trying to identify help?
Yeah, so within the Family and Consumer Sciences program at University of Maryland Extension, we like to take a overall wellness look at health. So we do a lot of programs in the area of nutrition and finance and physical activity, but we also view wellness is not complete without the mental and behavioral health component. So what are you dealing with in terms of your psychological needs? You know, are you taking care of your stress? And, you know, are you managing relationships? So mental and behavioral health encompasses the things that go beyond just physical health.
So it's more of a holistic view of the whole person.
That's right.
And you mentioned, you know, various programs that you're working with there that could help support, you know, reference to dating and others. Could you talk a little bit more about what those programs are?
Yeah, so we do mention part of my program offerings does involve healthy relationships work. And so in addition to the mental and behavioral health programming, we offer dating violence prevention programs for youth. And we also offer programs that target the relational health of couples. Actually, one of the programs that just got refunded through a federal grant was our Together program, which is a couple financial education program that also addresses relationship dynamics within the couple. And so it's a dual purpose financial education and couple relationship and enhancement. The two often go hand in hand. So that's just one example. Another example would be the Relationship Smarts program, which we've done a lot of work in Prince George's County with the Relationship Smarts program, doing youth relationship education in high schools, teaching teenagers the value of stable relationships, how to build a healthy relationship, and how to look out for the warning signs of abusive relationships.
And that's a very important topic, especially for the times that we're in now. Could you talk a little bit about what are some of those checkpoints to look at, especially with our youth and dating violence and sort of prevention? Are there key indicators that folks should be looking for, or youth could look for when they're in a relationship that may not, they may include, sort of dating violence or other things that happen?
Yeah, sure. So one of the things to look out for in terms of dating violence prevention would be efforts to control the dating partner. So when you're in a relationship and the other person is telling you how to dress, who you can spend time with, who you're allowed to talk to, these are things that may come up that, maybe in isolation, they might not immediately be a red flag, but as they pile up, they paint a picture of somebody who is not respecting, your agency as an individual, your ability to make your own decisions. And that's one of the clearest warning signs of a relationship that's headed towards an abusive area.
And I know we're in the times now of social media and other, apps and things that are going on. Are there any differences between, relationships that are sort of virtual compared to, now we're in COVID and folks are a little more distant? Do you see youth or other sort of identifying relationships differently if they're virtually and, this may not be an abusive relationship because, this is online? Does that come up very often?
Well, there's still the opportunity even virtually for someone to attempt to coerce somebody into, spending their time a certain way or cutting off certain people. And there's definitely the opportunity for things like cyberbullying. So even though some relationships may be starting or may be, maintained online right now with the COVID restrictions, that there's still, you still have to look out for your safety in that environment. And realizing too that online, it's almost a little more difficult to get your message across in the way you want it to come across. Communication takes on a whole other level of challenges because you're not face-to-face and able to read body language and things like that. So yeah, it's definitely different in the online environment.
You also mentioned nutrition as being part of the programs initiatives that you offer. How does nutrition play a role in mental behavioral health services?
Yeah, so there's actually a lot of overlap between things like nutrition and financial wellness and some of the traditional programs in the family and consumer sciences realm and mental health. As I said, there's, a big relationship component when you're in a relationship and discussing finances. And with nutrition, the way you take care of your body and the way you feed yourself can affect your mood. One of our field educators out in Western Maryland, she covers the Garrett and Allegheny and Washington County. She has a great presentation on food and mood and how certain foods are linked through the compounds that they have in them to your brain health. And so she has a great presentation there, bridging the gap between how you feed your body and how your brain functions. And so there's definitely links like that between mental and behavioral health and nutrition.
Food and mood. I like that. So mentioning some of your other staff, who particularly are the staff that provide a lot of these services? Can you tell a little bit about their background and some of their experience?
Yeah. So across University of Maryland Extension, our field faculty are the ones that do a lot of the direct education. They're in every county and Baltimore City in Maryland, and their background is pretty far ranging. Within the Family and Consumer Sciences program, we have a lot of people who have public health backgrounds. We have a lot of people who have nutrition backgrounds. We have people like myself with mental health backgrounds. And so everyone brings a certain level of expertise to the job. And we're also educators. So we kind of bridge the gap between research and practice.
That's great. Where have you seen the most need with the University of Maryland Extension Services programs?
Well, there's a lot of needs. I'll just speak, within my area in family and consumer sciences, a big issue right now, especially over the past 6 months with COVID, is in the area of rural mental health. So, everyone's mental health has taken a toll. The pandemic has taken a toll on everyone's mental health over the past 6 months. And there's lots of news articles about it, lots of people talking on podcasts about it. And the fact of the matter for rural audiences is that there's just less access to quality mental health care, or even if the quality is very high, there's just not enough providers in rural areas. So that's one of the big challenges. Another challenge is that, you know, there's still stigma in terms of reaching out for mental health care. And so people wait, and they might wait so long that their mental health issues turn into something that lands them in the emergency room. You know, maybe they're having a panic attack, or maybe they are experiencing suicidal thoughts. This would end them up in the emergency room, where if they had just been able to get linked to appropriate mental health care earlier, they wouldn't be in that type of emergency situation. And so that's one of the biggest needs that I've observed. And it's why taking a community approach to mental health, which is what we're doing at the university, is so vital. We're offering up programs that are targeting organizations. So not just individuals, but also people in the community who work with a variety of individuals. For example, one of our upcoming programs is targeting rural healthcare providers to enable them to have conversations about mental health issues that might come up, particularly in a farming community. So we're training folks through our mental health services to be ready to have those conversations earlier with the people that they serve, with the people that these other professionals are serving. And so through having a greater support network in the community, the issues that individuals face might be caught so that they can get referred and so that they can get the help they need and so that they don't end up in the emergency room. So that's one example being, you know, kind of professional development as a way to enhance the community's capacity to address mental health.
Has there been any sort of, you know, linkages, or do you see mostly with sort of generational, whether it's a rural community or other or urban communities, where, you know, there may be, I guess, folks are more not inclined to seek mental health services just because, you know, it's sort of a, maybe culturally, you know, it's more, things are more, I think I can take care of this, or it's more done in the family.
Yeah, so that's actually something that we're talking about a lot in our upcoming series on farming communities and mental health, is that there's this, in that community, there's definitely a can-do attitude and an idea that everyone should be self-reliant. And that actually carries with it a lot of strength. You know, you get a lot of stuff done when you have that attitude. However, it also has another side to it, which is that you might wait longer than other people to seek help when you really need it. So that would be something regionally and perhaps generationally that affects people's seeking mental health. But also you see in the younger generation, there was just a national poll done by the National 4-H Council and Harris, I believe. And what they found was that among young people, so 4-H teenagers right now, they actually found that there's still a broad perception of stigma against talking about mental health issues, even in our youngest members of society. And so I think that the stigma maybe fluctuates between generations, but it's still there even among young people today. So talking about it and making it out in the open is definitely still work that needs to be done.
Yeah, that is definitely true. And so, you know, speaking, just sort of talking about it, are there common myths that are normally associated with mental health? And you mentioned some of the stigmas. Are there myths that folks think, you know, what the reality is compared to what it actually is?
Definitely. So one of the biggest myths that I've encountered in my years as a mental health professional is that talking about something severe like suicide will put the idea in somebody's head. That's one of the most common myths that I hear. There's a lot of people out there trying to dispel that myth, but it's still out there. It just feels so scary to talk with somebody who may be facing depression about thoughts of suicide. It's a scary area. And so people just stay silent because they don't want to create that thought. But the fact of the matter is, when someone approaches a person who's experiencing depression or depressive symptoms and asks, that direct kind of confident question actually helps them think through it and, you know, perhaps get support faster. The thought is not going to be generated by asking that type of question. The thought's probably already there, or if it's not, it's not going to start because somebody who wanted to help asked the question. So really, your best support is just to be there and try to ask direct questions. And that's how you can support those people. And actually, one of the things that we offer through University of Maryland Extension is mental health first aid training. So I myself just got certified as an instructor. We have other educators who are certified as instructors. And that actually teaches you how to have those conversations, not just about suicide, but about a variety of mental health issues. And it teaches you how to be, I guess, not the weakest link, you know, that if you recognize it and that somebody else is having a mental health challenge, you can be the person that links them to the care that they need earlier so that it doesn't turn into something worse.
That's interesting. So it is okay to talk about it and ensure that, you know, we allow folks to be comfortable with talking about how they feel.
Totally.
Yeah. And so you mentioned, so mental health first aid training, is that for anyone? So can anyone take that who doesn't have a mental health or a behavioral health background?
Yeah, it's totally for everybody. The goal is actually to teach more people who are not mental health experts about this idea. Because if you're trained as a mental health expert, you get those types of principles as part of your training. But for everyone else, you know, you may have a natural talent for talking to people. You may have a natural, you know, sensitive, caring nature, but it still may be hard to figure out what exactly to say or when you should start, you know, pushing them towards greater care or more intensive services. And so you want to sign up for mental health first aid training if you're, you know, out there and having questions about supporting others' mental health. And you don't need any prior, you know, specialized education or training. There's even a version out there that targets peer-to-peer at the teen level. So you can even be as young as, you know, 16 years old and be getting this type of training.
That sounds like a great resource. So what are some organizations that you already partner with?
Yeah, so we have partnered with a variety of organizations throughout the state. So one of our partners, common partner throughout the state, are local health departments. So we have been invited by state and local health departments to present on mental health issues this year, especially with the COVID pandemic. We have also partnered with school systems to offer the relationship education and dating violence prevention type of programs that I mentioned. That's been a big success in school systems, especially in Prince George's County. We have partnered with other healthcare type of organizations, as I mentioned, to, you know, bring greater mental health literacy to the people who work in healthcare, not just doctors, but all support people within healthcare. So those are just a few examples of the type of organizations that we have partnered with, but we're very much open to partnerships with a variety of organizations, community groups, you know, faith-based organizations, anybody really who sees a need in their community for mental health services at the educational level can request services from us.
So it sounds like really any organization that works with youth or adults should really be connecting with you.
Yeah, if you think that you're encountering mental health issues in your work, think about the example that I gave earlier of a financial planner. You know, you may be working a bank in town and your office is in charge of, you know, estate planning or other, you know, in the farming community, it may be like succession planning for who's going to take over the farm. And these are economic, financial issues, but there's a lot of emotional things that go on with those types of conversations. And so just having that basic level of mental health literacy and being able to identify, maybe, you know, the issues that I'm encountering in my financial work with this family, maybe it would be good for them to also seek consultation with a family therapist, you know, so that they're improving their communication as I teach them these financial skills. So that's, you know, that's just one example of how, you know, an area that you might not think about mental health overlapping with, how it actually might have a real impact there. You can imagine all the emotions that come along with talking about money.
Yeah, I'm sure. And so, you know, and I'm sure that, you know, previously these presentations were done in person, but I'm assuming that you're still able to provide these services virtually to groups.
Definitely. We can provide virtual education through online platforms, and we are following, you know, all the guidelines associated with, you know, slowly reopening. For now, though, the University of Maryland Extension programs are pretty much virtual, but in a sense that allows us to be in more places at once. And then we definitely work on, you know, ensuring that there's accessibility, you know, for those who need any kind of accommodations. So really, you know, it's, if you have a need for a program, don't hesitate to contact us. You know, we want to serve anyone.
Great. And so for someone just having an interest in wanting to connect, what's the best way normally folks able to connect with to find out about more information?
Yeah, so we do have a blog called Breathing Room. So that's one place where, you know, we're just this year, we're now starting to include more and more mental health type issues on the blog. So that's breathingroom.umd.edu. So that's one way that people can get more information about that. And then we pretty soon in the new year, just a couple months from now, we will have a page on our UMD, the AGNR website, that will be addressing mental health. So that's forthcoming. But yeah, for now, you know, our written materials are at the College of Agriculture's website, you know, that covers University of Maryland Extension. We also have the blog Breathing Room. And there are, you can follow the College of Agriculture and University of Maryland Extension on Facebook. And we also do have Twitter. So there's a variety of ways to follow and keep up to date.
Perfect. How has COVID, as we've been hearing many stories about sort of the impact, you know, financially of COVID, how have you seen or understood that COVID has affected sort of more mental behavior health of individuals?
Yeah, so in terms of the isolation aspect, early on, there was definitely, you know, an increase in anxiety, both from the overall fear surrounding COVID, but also from a lot of people being stuck at home, increasing their anxiety just from not being able to engage in their typical routines. With that, there's also been impacts on family relationships. So one of the trainings that I've been offering recently targets the kind of rebooting of family routines so that the relationships that people enjoy in the family and with their partners can kind of recover from being outside of the routine. You think about it, when you're coming and going outside of the house, there's greetings and goodbyes, and those carry with them certain, you know, little bits of affection, whether it's physical or verbal. And when you're not leaving or going anywhere, you're not saying those things. And the absence of those little affection, moments of affection and reminders, you know, that your child or your partner or whoever you live with cares about you, those eventually add up to where you're feeling an absence of what used to be there in terms of the relationship. And so I saw that pretty early on. And so I developed a training to kind of help folks rethink, you know, all right, if we're still working at home, you know, even 6 months later, you know, how are we going to make sure that we can reclaim some of that closeness and that routine that supported our relationships?
Yeah, and it seems, you know, so basic, but just many of the things that we forget. And I think especially for those parents who are, you know, home now working with the kids and sort of trying to homeschool and, you know, and work from home, I'm sure that that brings major, you know, stress and anxiety to folks.
Yeah, so I also have a second version of that routines presentation that's targeted towards supporting children in their routines and how actually routine is really helpful during times of crisis. And so that's kind of another angle that I'm taking, you know, this year with the pandemic response.
That is definitely information that's needed. Are there any particular, you know, organizations that, you know, you have an interest in really connecting with that there may not have been a connection in the past?
Well, I did say that we have partnered with a lot of health departments and schools, but, you know, there are 23 counties in Baltimore City. So we're not, you know, I haven't met everyone in all those jurisdictions in terms of, you know, the schools and the health departments and organizations that have an audience, you know, that is relevant. And so those two types of organizations would be great partners with us. Any nonprofit who has any kind of human service mission would be a great partner for us. We don't charge for most of our services, or if we do, it's like very minimal. And so our goal is to bring the research, the resources, our area of expertise out to the community in a digestible way. So we really just want, you know, as broad a reach as possible.
Yeah, and it is statewide, just to, you know, so folks know this is a statewide program.
Yeah, so if you feel that you are, you know, in an area that's typically forgotten or underserved, don't hesitate and reach out and demand services, because we will be there.
Yeah, and also, you know, income should not be an issue, you know, especially, you know, folks without income or minimum income or low income, you know, this is a service that can help support them.
Yeah, definitely. You know, our services, we actually have, you know, besides mental health, you know, the Family and Consumer Sciences program does offer a variety of financial education type of workshops. So if you're looking for ways to manage money and you know, deal with things like health insurance, we have a whole initiative related to that. And so we're here to support your overall wellness, you know, from what you put in your body to how you take care of yourself financially to your mental health and the mental health of those around you.
Yeah, this is definitely great news. And then we're winding up. Is there anything that you would just like to leave the audience with, just keep in mind and be aware of as they're sort of going through their day-to-day lives?
Yeah, I would just make sure that you take time every day to detach in some way. That's one of the things that, you know, the research is showing, that with the increase among a lot of people in working from home, that there's a blurred distinction between relaxation and work time. And so you really need to take special care right now, especially if your work from home plans are extending into the new year, to make sure that you have daily detachment of some kind, because without that, the stress accumulates and it becomes harder to really unwind. So finding a small, consistent routine every day to detach in and just not worry about stuff for a few moments, that would be my biggest tip right now.
Yeah, which is something definitely I needed to hear, because you know, you're home and you tend to work longer because you're in a space that you're comfortable with and at times. Mm-hmm. I definitely appreciate that. And so again, I want to thank you for coming on, Dr. Chan, Mental and Behavioral Health Specialist with the University of Maryland Extension. We appreciate you taking your time and thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Glad to share about what we do.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening and subscribing to What's the 211 Podcast. We are here for you 24/7, 365 days a year, simply by calling 211. Also connect with us on Facebook and Twitter at 211 Maryland or at dragondigitalradio.podbean.com.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.